There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 108 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Yeah, we're back. If you wanted to, if you went to one of those commercials where they're talking about like stress headaches or something like that, they got the picture of the person like, you know, with the furrowed brow and the whole nine yards. That would have been, we could have gotten those photos done last hour. But thank you, thank you, thank you, great engineering folks for FM Talk 106.5, making the hamster run in the wheel once again. Y'all are appreciated. Thank you. Coming up this hour, we'll talk to my buddy Jeff. We got done. We missed Jeff. By the way, if you can. I was going to say Jeff Poore because he was on with us last hour, but he got cut off. He will join us again Wednesday, and we'll pick up that conversation. John Sharp is this hour, but Jeff will come back and finish out some of those thoughts. Of course, it will be in retrospect when we're talking about SCOTUS. That will be happening on Wednesday morning. Also, a heads up, my buddy Jim Cox sent me this. Reminder to y'all, Blue Marlin Grand Championship at the Wharf is this weekend. The greatest show in sport fishing. It is the Super Bowl of sport fishing. I mean, it's the biggest of the big. Millions of dollars at stake, and the biggest in marlin, tuna, dolphin, wahoo getting weighed in at what feels like a rock concert there at Main Street on the Wharf with the big jumbotrons, crowds. Also, our buddy Jim Cox, along with Kelly Finley, our host of the show. It's going to be on the TV, but we'll also be talking about it here on radio. Yeah, get this. They've actually upped the ante in so many ways this year for the Blue Marlin Grand Championship. Now 75 teams competing in this. 75 teams that will be splitting in some shape or form, at least the winning teams, $2 million in cash prizes. One yacht last year, one sport fishing boat last year. The team, Chase and Tail, took home a check for $430,000 for their first place Blue Marlin. So, obviously, it's big, big stakes and a lot of entertainment. Big entertainments when the fish come in to get weighed. But they have stuff going on at the Wharf all weekend long at BlueMarlinGrandChampionship.com for all the details, or find them on Facebook or Instagram. And also, a little teaser here. I will be doing this show, Midday Mobile, from a on-the-water, I mean, literally on-the-water location this week, but we'll tell you more about that coming up. But yeah, Blue Marlin Grand Championship happened this weekend, the greatest show in sport fishing. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, mentioned in the beginning of the show, I think, before the hamster stopped running in the wheel, that this hour we'd be talking to John Sharp with AL.com and talking some trains. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Man, I'm getting a little better. The blood pressure, I think, is the veins are starting to go back in on the side of my head. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, man.
Well, it sounds like a normal Monday morning in the dead of summer, so hang in there.
That's right. Making it through. All right, tomorrow, I saw on the Mobile City Council agenda, voting, or at least on the agenda, to talk about a train facility. Now, you and I are a depot, a station here in Mobile. You and I have talked about this story not just over months. Actually, you and I have talked about this over years, from the beginning of this discussion of passenger rail service to be back into the Gulf Coast region, our region, New Orleans, Mobile, eventually maybe stretching as far out as Orlando and points to the north as well. But Mobile was left out of the grant money here, right? Money coming from the state for a train station here in Mobile. What gives, and what can the city council do about this?
Well, what the city council is planning to vote on tomorrow is essentially money that was appropriated by the Southern Rail Commission through a Federal Railroad Administration grant that it received, I believe, about a year or so ago. And this money basically is to, or what they're going to vote on tomorrow is basically to hire a company to come in and do the design and engineering plans for a new train station. So it doesn't involve the actual build-out of any kind of facility, but this would have the plans in place if in case a movement is afoot to once again bring passenger rail service back to the Gulf Coast.
Okay, help me. I'm a simple guy. Are basically they doing the... Is this like the structural drawings, like if we were going to have a facility, here's where, you know, here's how big it would be, here's where the door would be, here are the windows. Is it that kind of detail, or is it just
exactly.
General? Okay.
Exactly. We should know what the building looks like. I mean, that's basically what we're doing here. And the general vicinity that they pointed to is probably one folks that have been around Mobile for a little while might remember the old passenger rail station that was down at the foot of Government Street on Long Water. Around about that location as well is what they're targeting this new station to be located. So this will be the design. You'll see what it actually looks like, the building of it. And the project, according to the contract, is supposed to go, well, the firm has until May 1st of next year to work on this project. So sometime in the spring, we should at least know what the building looks like.
Okay, I mean, but is this not premature?
Well, that's a good question. Is it not premature? But, you know, if you talk to the council members, they're saying, well, you get the plans, you get the design in place, you're ready to go in case, you know, there is, in fact, we're bringing Amtrak back. If, in fact, let's say next year, after an election's over with, and the Southern Rail Commission's able to obtain or apply for a new grant, federal grant, to restore passenger rail, and it comes back before Governor Ivey, and let's say it's down to maybe $1.1 million to restart. I'm just tossing out a fictitional number, but if it's a little lower than the $5.3 million that was denied just last month, then maybe, you know, that might be something worth looking at that the governor approves. And if in case that happens, we have Amtrak restarted, and the city has to move forward with having some sort of train facility in place, and they would have those designs to work off of. So, you know, there's a lot of, obviously, what-ifs in the future, but this is a contract in which the money is really, you know, the city's receiving this money as in the form of a grant from the Southern Rail Commission. So there isn't some huge outlay by the city on this. This is money, it is tax money, but it is money that is coming from another source, and the city has it, and instead of just not utilizing it for its intended purpose, it's going to vote tomorrow to move forward with that. Now, will that be a unanimous vote or not? I'm not for sure, but the council did not discuss this at all last week. Basically, we're well aware now that whenever something appears on the agenda for the first time, the council decides to wait a week and before voting on it, and so that's what we have tomorrow. The council will vote on this contract, which totals to be about $233,000.
Okay, and I think this is an important part you pointed out. The money, while taxpayer money, is coming in a grant through the Southern Rail Commission, and it can't be used for anything else. Am I right? It's earmarked to do this. Either you do this with the $233,000 or you don't get it. Is that correct?
That's correct, and it's a little bit opposite of what the governor did last month. And so the timing's kind of interesting. You know, about the Governor Ivey decided back in late June, I believe it was June 21st, there was a deadline in which the state needed to commit about $5.3 million for its share of restarting Amtrak service along the Gulf Coast, extending from Mobile to New Orleans. And she decided that, you know, the timing just was not right. She cited some of the concerns that we've heard expressed by the Port of Mobile with regards to perhaps some conflict with passenger rail and freight rail along that line. And so ultimately she decided not to accept to commit that money. It was a decision that was up to the governor's office. She's been criticized by that decision, in particular by Tuscaloosa Mayor Walt Maddox, a Democratic nominee for governor. So it's gotten a little bit of political hay since then. But now, you know, Mobile's come along, and they have this same opportunity, either utilize this grant or not utilize it, and they're deciding to go ahead and utilize it. Obviously, much lower amount than $5.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're deciding that the $233,000 is worth an investment to go ahead, at least, and design a facility. This is something that, you know, it's gotten, you know, the mayor of Mobile, who is Republican, and some of the city council members who are Democrat, both kind of all agree it's not really a partisan issue for the city. The city is looking at it as, you know, we're bringing passengers, trying to get our airport or commercial air service closer to downtown. Going to reconfigure Water Street, trying to make it more pedestrian friendly. So they kind of look at passenger rail as being a nice attraction potentially to that area. And so I'm not overly surprised that they would support this type of investment at this point in the junction with regards to moving forward with passenger rail.
The junction, that's we're talking about railroad. That's perfect. Hold on, we're coming right back. More with John Sharp from AL.com. So, yeah, so the 200, then this is good because I've heard this talked about here in the last week or so. The $233,000 is a grant funded by the Southern Rail Commission. It's not coming from the coffers of Mobile City Council, so city budget. We'll get your take on this when we get back. Y'all stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 124 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. And big thank you to the engineering folks who made it happen, getting everything fixed out there. And yes, by the way, you on the text line, I do realize that there's a chance that there was some kind of vengeance that happened there, something like some Maximum Overdrive movie. Because I started off the show with a discussion of just having to. I didn't feel it was brutality against the vending machine. I threw a strong shoulder into the vending machine to get the $1 packet of peanuts that were hanging so very, very slightly from the corkscrew of snacks as they deploy the snacks. It didn't come out, so I had to throw the shoulder into the thing to get the delicious peanuts. And I had a person come around the corner and just kind of give me a big sigh, like, and why did I have to brutalize the machine? I said, oh, I'm just getting my snacks. And yes, the next thing, the machines, which happened to be the transmitter, the three-phase power and the transmitter, et cetera, all the stuff that makes FM signal kind of failed on us. So, yes, I do. Y'all are saying that I'm getting my just desserts, which is quite possible. All right. Just there you go. Have your fun. My buddy John Sharp from AL.com continues our discussion about train or not to train in Mobile. And actually, this discussion and the vote tomorrow by the city council is going to be whether to get some drawings done, huh? That's the kind of the simplified version.
Fancy drawings. You bet. That's basically it. And, you know, there's a deadline to get it done within a year. You know, we all remember, perhaps folks don't, but, the Hurricane Katrina had quite an impact on this. The last time we had a train station mobile, I put the picture up on AL.com. It's a pretty powerful picture we took then of the floodwaters inundating the station at the time. And that's been the end of it since. So we haven't had passenger rail go through Mobile and New Orleans since that time. And there's been a lot of work done behind the scenes to get it to this point and get it to the point where it got last month. And even those that don't support passenger rail, you got to give credit to some of these folks. They've been aggressive. They've put together a lot of planning, and then there's been a lot of efforts and a lot of federal attention in trying to find a way, I guess, to bring back some sort of passenger rail service that would connect some of the Gulf Coast cities.
Remind folks, too, that, or they weren't maybe listening in the first segment, this proposed, the drawing they're doing, the workup they're doing, this facility, if it were built, would sit where?
Well, it would be at the foot of Government Street. I don't know the exact coordinates or anything like that.
But, I don't need the lat long. I just kind of
right. It would be somewhere by Cooper Riverside Park at the foot of Government Street. It would be a front and center type of building, I suspect. I mean, it would be something that folks would see. It'd be close to the Arthur Outlaw Convention Center and close to Gulf Quest, and it would be a standalone facility.
And that was one of the questions, too, that, you know, I know they're doing the drawings right now, the workup, but if, you know, funding's tight here and people aren't sure if this is going to work, could the city do something fairly Spartan that would qualify as a rail station? And then, you know, I'm kind of a pay-as-you-go guy. If it's very popular and is getting a lot of traffic, then heck, yeah, they'd add on to it at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly. If you talk to folks that are with the Southern Rail Commission or with some transportation advocates, they'll say, you know, we'll do whatever we can do to get this thing going. If it requires just an improved flat that'll take you to the train with a weather protective awning, mm-hmm. That's good enough. You know, kind of like a bus station type of facility, at least in the early going. And so it all depends, I guess, on the funding that might be available later for construction on exactly what they do. But these design plans are design plans. They're for a facility in the future. You also might notice on the agenda it says for a high-speed rail corridor.
Yes, and, what about that?
That might throw some folks as well. But, in fact, it is a corridor for high-speed rail that was named as one of 11 corridors back when the Obama stimulus plan was approved in 2009. So, you know, that was a planning document basically approved way back then, and 2009, seems like a long time ago. And so, you know, it's out there as a potential someday as a high-speed corridor. There's no guarantee. I guess for some train advocates, they like to see a low-speed corridor eventually approved.
Right. That's why I was worried when I saw that this shows up on the agenda for City Council tomorrow, that the two things are conflated, right? And they're not. They're separate issues that are being discussed.
Exactly. But it is referred to as a high-speed corridor. So mm-hmm. that is true. Even though, in fact, the prospects of a high-speed rail, however you might define it, is still probably many years away. And right now the focus is just trying to get that for the train advocates and for some city folks along this route is to get, and state and federal folks, is to get this route up and going again that has not had any kind of passenger rail on it since, other than an inspection train that ran back in 2016, has not had a regular train on it since, or passenger rail train, Amtrak, on it since 2005.
I think the people I hear that are worried about this are always worried about this being the next boondoggle, right? That it's something that the taxpayers of Mobile are going to be on for that's not successful. I think the majority of people that are fair-minded, if you said, hey, this is not going to cost you a whole bunch of money, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, you know, we're none the worse on this. That's why I'm worried about the high-speed rail discussion and all that. Let's just pick one here and say, hey, could we build a small platform and see if this works?
You know, you make a good point. I mean, what this $5.3 million commitment from Governor Ivey was all about, and I think sometimes gets lost in some of the criticism, is it was a three-year run. So basically, it was a trial run. After 3 years, the federal appropriation would have gone away, and the state would have had to decide whether or not to continue on with this.
Hey, let's do this. I'm up against a hard break.
Run.
Hey, I'm against the hard break. Can you hold on for a second?
Sure.
All right, coming right back. John Sharp from AL.com. We'll continue this discussion, hear from you as well at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 137, FM Talk 106.5. You heard me talk about last week and the week before about checking out Goldfinger's, two locations in Saraland and on Dolphin Street in Mobile. Go to the one close to me there on Dolphin Street. Goldfinger's founder, Bill Dorminey, opened his first store back in 2009 in Dothan. It was a hit from day one there. And since its second year, they've been voted the best chicken tenders in Dothan. Now there are six stores across the state of Alabama. We're lucky we got some in our area. And I told you about, I am a chicken finger fan. I'm a chicken fan. And I'm trying to do right. Okay, I like fried chicken. Okay, I love fried chicken. But you know, I need to work on what I'm eating and those kind of things. So I'm going for the grilled chicken. The problem is you go a lot of places that they say, oh, yeah, we also have grilled. And it's just like not even close to as good as their fried chicken is. Well, Goldfinger's is not that case. I was a good boy and had the grilled chicken there, and it tastes fantastic. It's seasoned right. You know, some places it's kind of like bland if it's grilled. Seasoned just right, cooked to perfection, and it is fresh chicken. It's fantastic. You need to check those out. And there's a bunch of other stuff on the menu that I have not checked out yet, but I hear great things, like the hamburgers, also the buffalo chicken sandwiches, their BLTs, which I do love BLTs, and also they've got their chicken salads piled high with chopped, grilled, or fried chicken, and their pineapple chicken wrap, all that, a big, big menu. You can order ahead. You can do drive-through. You can go see them right now on Dauphin Street and in Saraland. Goldfingers, and when you're there, seriously, if you're trying to do the healthy thing, check out their grilled chicken fingers and tell me if you don't agree. They're pretty fantastic. All right, continue our conversation with John Sharp from AL.com. And I want to wrap up here talking about the train situation, just because tomorrow Mobile City Council votes on this grant. Basically, they're voting to say yes to use the money that's being directed from the Southern Rail Commission. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that was passed down by the Federal Railroad Administration. And again, the money is for the design, not the construction of a train station.
Now that's private businessman in me goes, hey, can we take the $233,000? I'll find somebody to do the drawings for $33,000, and we'll get it built for $200,000, and we'll be done.
Well, I don't know if it's that easy or not, but and I guess maybe that'll be discussed tomorrow a little bit if they can get it done cheaper. But again, it's a grant. You know, the cities get grants passed down to them. You either use them or lose them. And I think the city's, their strategy, at least along Water Street, seems to be trying to find ways to get people to downtown Mobile. So, you know, this is an opportunity I don't think that they want to just dismiss because the governor's decision last month not to commit the state money for the restart of Amtrak. They're looking at it as a futuristic thing, perhaps someday we might get this train service going again. It could be. Maybe someday we get privatized rail coming through, but at least we have some sort of plan in place to build a station, which, you know, you have to have in order to have a train stop in your downtown area.
All right. I want to jump to a story you posted up yesterday at AL.com. We were talking about this morning, John, about Senator Doug Jones saying he's open to voting yes for Trump's Supreme Court choice. Of course, we'll find out tonight, 8 o'clock, who the president has picked. I mean, let's peel back the onion here. Let's get into the politics of this. I mean, this is obviously Doug Jones is a Democrat senator from a very, very red state.
You are correct. And it's a similar comment that a lot of red state Democrats are making as well right now. There's similar comments going from senators in Indiana and North Dakota, West Virginia, Joe Manchin's. They're basically all kind of sitting on the outskirts waiting to see what this pick's going to be and then just kind of make a decision after that. But it's a difficult situation for these red state Democrats. It's been written about a lot over the weekend and discussed in the morning shows that we saw yesterday. Some of them just put in kind of a difficult position. There was a New York Times story that came out yesterday in which a political strategist said that it's a terrible choice for these guys. I mean, you know, it's just puts them in a very big, difficult situation. And, here we are right before the midterms, and three of them have contested races. And, you know, they're targeted by the Republicans. So it's going to be it's a very difficult situation for these folks. And as well as for Senator Doug Jones, who, while he's not up for election this fall, he is in 2020. We are aware that Bradley Byrne is interested potentially in running for that seat. And he made some comments today to the local media about this. And he believes and hopes that Senator Jones, and this is his quote, will do the right thing and support President Trump's pick, because I think President Trump's pick will be the pick of the vast majority of the people of the state of Alabama, end quote. And basically saying, hey, you know, I'm ready to pounce if you make a decision not to support the Supreme Court choice. And so away we go.
Yeah, let me show my cynicism here on this and bounce it back and forth. So if Doug Jones thinks he has a chance of winning in 2020. If he thinks he has a chance of winning in 2020, then this play, because he's also said, well, he could vote no, you know, he could vote yes or he could vote no, then that might be, that might behoove him to say, hey, I tell you what, I'm going to go against the party and I'm going to support President Trump's nominee. But if he sees what a lot of us at this point think is writing on the wall, that, you know, whether it be Bradley Byrne or somebody else, he will be bested in 2020. Then it comes down to this decision. Where's his allegiance? To what the people in the state of Alabama want, or what is the party, you know, the party wants, the Democrat Party wants? Because, you know, you could be cynical and say, if you're a Democrat party leader in Washington, say, hey, man, you got no chance in 2020. We need you now. You might as well just go ahead and do this and vote for everything we want you to do, because you're not going to win. I mean, that, you know, it's, I mean, him saying that he's going to weigh his decision makes me say, well, he thinks he's got a chance in 2020. A lot of people disagree with that.
Well, in fairness to him, and even Congressman Byrne said this today, too. He says, you know, obviously, you know, we can't expect him to make up his mind until we hear who the name is. So let's kind of wait till who the name is. That's fair, I think, until this evening. And then I think it's okay to start kind of judging on which way or that. It's a difficult choice, no matter what. I mean, if you're Senator Jones or any red state Democrat at this point, I mean, it's a very difficult choice, because this choice has been hyped up. I mean, I think Senator Durbin was, from Illinois, was on some of the TV shows yesterday talking about, you know, he hopes that, you know, doing anything he can, even if it means losing some of these red state Democratic seats. So, you know, we got to stop this Supreme Court choice from going forward. And there's been other more liberal, more left-leaning Democratic senators have come out with even stronger comments about how potentially devastating the choice could be. So, you know, they're going to be quite of a predicament. I mean, they're going to be in the middle of both sides coming at them, and it's not going to be an easy decision.
Well, but if you are a Democrat senator in a state that surprisingly, to some folks, went for Trump, think about the Rust Belt states and those places, then you could say, yeah, you know what, they're in a kind of a pickle here, because they may have a real good chance at holding on. I mean, look at states, we don't have to go too far back. I mean, look at the state of Alabama that used to vote Democrat on the state level and Republican on a national level. There's a lot of states that mix up where they go, you know, from when they vote Democrat, when they vote Republican. But Alabama is not that state, right? I mean, if you're looking at the chances, unless who knows what the future holds, but that Doug Jones hangs on to the seat in 2020, I would say at this point, knowing what I know, I give that pretty steep odds, right? So there's a temptation to just go ahead and do whatever for the party elders, because you got no chance of winning.
Well, that's correct. I mean, you know, you can say that, no chance of winning, but I think we were all saying no chance of winning, too, after the primaries last year, and look what happened. So you never really know, I guess, truly. And maybe Jones is thinking that, hey, you know, I might have a shot. I found a way to win last time around. Maybe I can do it again. I can't get into, you know, his mindset right now, and whether or not this. And again, 2 years, the timing might be a little bit better for Jones than it is for these other red state Democrats, because in 2 years, will people be remembering this issue? The way we've seen politics go lately, it's definitely a hyper attention deficit disorder type of thing anymore. It's kind of like whatever issue comes up is the one we cling on.
That's true.
So, you know, we can talk about how defining, culturally defining, generationally defining this pick's going to be tonight, but, you know, it's a whole different. I mean, we're going to have the president on the ballot in 2 years as well. So, I mean, I think we should temper our end-all be-alls on whether or not this was the defining moment of the Alabama Senate race in 2020.
There we go. It's John Sharp, AL.com. If people want to reach out to you online, how do they do it?
Well, I'm on Twitter at JohnSharp99, and my stories are up on AL.com.
Check them out right there. Plus, pretty soon we'll be on there talking football as well, right? 2 weeks?
Yeah, right around the corner, it seems like. You know, get going with media days, and then it's time to start thinking more about football, because you know, the weather needs to cool off eventually, and so we can start having that feeling.
Okay, keep on keeping on. I'm with you, man. Thank you, John. Check it in, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
155 FM Talk 106.5 and Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Hey, heads up. So I mentioned Blue Marlin Grand Championship. That's going on starting this weekend. Plus, we have the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament with the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. That's coming up on Saturday, and that'll put us just a week out from the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. If you didn't know, you got to check, pick up, go. Can you buy the Guinness World Book of Records anymore? Remember when I was a kid, you pick up that book and that stayed in the backpack with all the other stuff, like looking through the world records. But if you did pick up a copy, you would see the planet's largest multi-day saltwater fishing tournament is right here at home, the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. I think last year, 3,300 people fished in that tournament. It'll be the same this year or more. And also, the participation for you, even if you're not going to fish, great music. Obviously, see the fish, come down and hang out on Dolphin Island, is going on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd. And a new addition this year, Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, that I think is going to be huge, and that is the Crane Works Red Snapper Jackpot. This is another jackpot, so you still have the Big Game Jackpot, Speckled Trout Jackpot, King Mackerel Jackpot, but now you have the Crane Works Red Snapper Jackpot. And talking to folks with the JCs, they said, here's how it lays out, that based on, I think, 100 boats entering, which I think they'll have no problem, the first place is going to pay out like $6,000 for Red Snapper, and they're going to pay 10 places in this. So I think this will be huge as well. Tickets on sale through the website, and of course, their local retailers. You can check that all out at ADSFR.com. It kicks off the night of Thursday night, the 19th, with the Liars Contest, then fishing Friday the 20th, then Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd. Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, 85 years now. Or 80, actually, more than that, 85th annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. So we'll see you there and hopefully see you this weekend fishing with the kids for the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. All right, a couple odds and ends here. Before we get into Feinbaum, somebody had said, I'm still getting confused on who we're voting for on July 17th. July 17th is the runoff for the primaries. Okay, on the Republican ticket, and that's where most of the action is, statewide, you're looking at Lieutenant Governor, which is Will Ainsworth and Twinkle Kavanaugh, Attorney General Troy King, Steve Marshall, also for Baldwin County State Senator Chris Elliott, David Northcutt. You have some judicial, you have Brad Mendheim and Sarah Stewart running for Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. For Court of Civil Appeals, you have Christy Edwards and Michelle Thomason in runoff here. For the Court of Criminal Appeals, place number two, Rich Anderson, Chris McCool. For Agriculture Commissioner, Gerald Dial and Rick Pate. For Baldwin County Judge of Probate, Harry Doleve Jr. and Alan Lipscomb. And also Tucker Dorsey and Billy Joe Underwood for Baldwin County Commission, District number three. So that's in play for Baldwin County. Obviously, the statewide race is the same for Mobile County. A couple things here that are different for Mobile County. For Circuit Court Judge, 13th Judicial Circuit, place number six, Brandy Hambright and Harry Satterwhite, and also Spiro Chirigatis and George Zogby running for District Court Judge, Mobile County, place number four. So, in addition, you have State Representative District 102, Willie Gray and Shane Stringer. So those are the differences, a few differences between Mobile and Baldwin County. I'll tell you what, we'll put these links up on our Facebook page and you can check them out right there. July 17th, we'll be here very, very soon. All right, 158, I'm out of here. Feinbaum on the way next. See you in the morning for Mobile Mornings.